Okay. Good evening, everyone. We are here. We're here together because Klal Yisrael has been dealt a difficult loss over the course of the weekend. Four different, unique, very special Talmidei Chachamim who span the Jewish Torah world and the spectrum of Jewish teaching and Jewish thought have been taken from us. And as per the request of Mrs. Kamenetsky and SKA, I was asked to share some words in order to perhaps give context to their passing, what they stood for, and who they were. I'm going to try to present things that you're not going to see online, and I do encourage everybody to look and to search and to listen to videos and to read articles about these four unique, very special people. And I'm going to try to give a perspective that perhaps is not being discussed in other places. At the outset, I want to be clear. I did not know any of these four people well at all. Some of them I never even met. Only one of them I had some small interactions with. And I'm simply coming from the perspective of a fan, someone who loves Torah and tries to love Torah and Gadol Yisrael and Talmidei Chachamim, and try to share with you a little bit about them. And hopefully it will encourage you to want to learn more about them and from them and to access their works and their thoughts and their Torah. I'm going to move in the order of those who I know least about to those who I know more about. That's the order that was easiest for me. It doesn't say anything about the order of how I respect them or appreciate them. I kind of want to discuss the first two that I know the least about at first, then we'll spend more time on the other two. Let's begin with the again, I'll share the pictures, the drive one more time that people should be able to click on and see the pictures. Let's discuss the life of Rav Yitzhak Shiner. Rav Yitzhak Shiner was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. There were no yeshivas in Pittsburgh at the time. But almost none of his friends would remain religious that he grew up with in Pittsburgh. Rabbi Shiner's life changed after a fundraiser. Rav Avram David Bender, the father of Rabbi Yaakov Bender of Yeshiva Darchei Torah, came to Pittsburgh to raise money for yeshiva. And he would generally go to another neighborhood where he had relatives. But once he came to the Shiner neighborhood, and he stayed with the Shiner family. And since we were one of the few families that ate kosher, Hashem organized that Rabbi Bender would stay with the Shiners. Now, most Mishulachim, Rabbi Shiner would say, would come to their houses, eat, sleep, and wouldn't take notice of the kids or pay attention to the family. However, Rabbi Bender was different. Rabbi Shiner was 16 at the time, and he asked me what he was learning. And I told him I had finished school. And he was interested in me, and he asked his parents, how come you don't send your son Isidore, as he was known, and later become Yitzchak, why don't you send him to Yeshiva New York? And the parents said, a yeshiva? What's a yeshiva? They were very from Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Kashrus people, but yeshivas were in Poland. It didn't occur to anybody at that point in the 20th century that there were yeshivas in America where people could learn Torah. It simply didn't exist. And Rabbi Bender told the Shiners that I'll take him there. And it took 6 months until he got to New York. And happened that he ran after a bus and he slipped on the ice and he sprained his foot, which certainly those of us in the New York area can relate to today. And he was in a cast for about 3 months and he couldn't go to New York. He had to go to the doctor all the time. And eventually he felt that he got there, but he felt this was the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara was trying to stop him from getting to yeshiva and trying to grow and to become a Ben Torah. Rabbi Shiner attributed his spiritual growth to his mother because his mother would cry tears and tears and tears when she would light Shabbos candles. And the boy should remain Jewish, go to shul, say Kaddish for the parents. And Rabbi Shiner's mother's prayers were eventually answered. And Rabbi Bender took him to New York. And we'll see in a moment, Rabbi, Mrs. Shiner's tefillos were answered above and beyond anything she could have expected. So you have this American-born young man without a really strong yeshiva background at 16, 17, making his way to New York. And he eventually went to Yeshiva College, to Yeshiva University, where he studied. And that he was there for a little bit of time. And one summer, he went to Camp Masifta in the Catskills, which was one of the only from religious Jewish camps at that time. And the boys in the camp convinced Yitzchak Shiner to switch to Yeshiva Torah V'das. And he transferred to the yeshiva, and he learned under Rosh Shlomo Hyman, who would become his main Rebbe, who he considered to be his Rebbe Mavhak. And he also was influenced by Rosh Raga Feivel Mendelovich, the Menahal of Yeshiva Torah V'das. Towards the end of the 1940s, he married the granddaughter. He grew tremendously in Torah. He turned his whole essence around to become a Talmid Chacham. And he married the granddaughter of Rav Baruch Ber Leibowitz, the great Rosh Yeshiva Kamenetz. And this was the daughter of Moshe Bernstein, who was the Rosh Yeshiva Kamenetz at that time. Imagine a young man from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, married the daughter of one of the greatest Roshi, the granddaughter of one of the greatest Roshi Yeshiva, who was born, this girl was born in Vilna, and they ended up together, him from Pittsburgh, she from Vilna. The Medrash says that the Kadosh Baruch Hu brings two people from one end of the earth to get together, and both ends of the earth to get together and to marry. And he would point out from this story how mysterious the ways of a Kadosh Baruch Hu are, that this boy from Pittsburgh would end up marrying the granddaughter of one of the most important Roshi Yeshiva in the 20th century. You'll see from the pictures in front of you, him learning Torah, the picture of the him with the man in gray, the man with the gray beard in front of him, and giving shir in front of the Bechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the great Rosh Yeshiva and Posek, the author of the Shuri Yesh. Off to the side, he's sitting with Baruch Rakov, who was one of the become the Gatehead Rosh Yeshiva. And the other picture, you have him and Rav Shlomo David Soloveitchik, who will be one of the other people we'll talk about in a moment. What was the essence of Rabbi Shiner and how he taught Torah and how he learned Torah? He was not somebody who was mechadish, who had novel ideas or exciting ideas in his shiurim. Rather, he would repeat the ideas of his Rebbeim, with Shlomo Hyman, and his father, and his grandfather, his father-in-law, and his grandfather-in-law. And he would say over their ideas with such focus and such concentration, and it was like he was standing at Har Sinai, his Talmidim would say. He felt that he was passing on the Masorah. He was simply a conduit of what came before him to inspire and to teach the next generation of Talmidei Chachamim. And when he spoke about Talmidei Chachamim, and he spoke about Rabbanim, he spoke about rabbis, even those younger than him, it was such with such respect, such kavod haTorah. If you have a chance, please go and watch the speech he gave at the 12th Siyum HaShas. Not the last Siyum HaShas, but the one before that. The way he speaks about Rabbi Yisachar Franz, who had given the drasha at the Siyum HaShas, and how impressed he was with him, and the kavod haTorah he has, he doesn't say anything fancy in that drasha, but it's with such sincerity, such passion. He says very, very simple ideas, but ideas that perhaps we're not sensitive to, ideas that we're not paying attention to, and that's how it resonated with his Talmidim and generations of Talmidei Chachamim. As he settled in Eretz Yisrael, earlier in Switzerland, and then again becoming the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Kamenetz, the great yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Constant awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his davening and his learning. He was filled with Yiras Hashem, by all accounts, according to all students and all other Gadol Yisrael who knew him. They described his davening as being Omed Lifnei HaMelech Mamish, as if he was actually, not actually he was, he felt he was standing before Hashem in the most literal sense. That is Rav Yitzchak Shiner. I encourage everybody to go look at the video of the speaking of the 12 Siyum HaShas. The next great Gadol who was taken from us over the course of the weekend was Rav Avram Avidan, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Shalavim. If anybody has any interactions, I would assume everybody here has some sort of connection to Shalavim, whether having attended there, a brother, a father, a spouse, having learned there, a cousin. Everybody has some sort of connection to this great yeshiva. And the Rosh Yeshiva, for a significant amount of time, was Avram Avidan. He was the author of a number of Svarim. As a young man, he knew the Chazon Ish. He would later learn Yeshiva Chevron, becoming a close Talmud of Rabbi Yecheskel Sarna, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Chevron. He would later be the Chavrusa of Rav Zil Orbach, the son of Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and he would also be Chavrusas with Rav Moshe Shmuel Shapiro, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Be'er Yaakov. He was a close student of Rav Yashiv as well, and he would go on to serve as the Rav Tzvai. This man who grew up in Haredi yeshivas in a Haredi environment was inspired to go serve Am Yisrael and Klal Yisrael in the Israeli army, becoming a rabbi in the army, serving under Rosh Shlomo Goren, who was also the head of the army rabbin at that time. He would end up writing incredibly important svarim about halacha and the army, one called Shabbos Samoed B'Tzahal, Shabbos and the Holidays in Tzahal, and a sefer called Masa Bahar. Both are svarim that are indispensable in the study of warfare and halacha and keeping, remaining from and keeping Shabbos and Kashrus and other halachos while in the army. They are widely cited texts to this day. Soon after, he would be recruited by Rav Meir Schlesinger to come to Shalavim as a Ram, as a Rebbe, and would eventually become the Rosh Yeshiva of this distinguished yeshiva. In describing him, there was something princely about him. I heard from a number of his Talmidim. Look at the picture of him in the second slide. He looks like a prince, like a melech. There's something distinguished the way he carried himself, the way he dressed. He always looked sharp in presenting himself as a nasi ha-Torah, a prince representing the Torah world. Rav Avidan Shirim were challenging, they were enlightening. His learning in the Beis Medrash exemplified a rischa d'oraisa, a fire of Torah. He was very, very stark, very, very intense in his learning, engaging the students, pushing the students. In the Shir Klali in the Beis Medrash, Rav Avidan would be loud, dynamic, with an intense back and forth between Rav Avidan and the Talmidim, trying to bring that Masorah he received from his Rebbeim Rav Elyashiv and the Chaznish and Rav Chasva Sarna and bring them to the students. He pushed his Talmidim to learn in depth, be'ian, and not on a superficial level. Not to learn in depth, he said, would lead someone to forget how to learn. And he would end up guiding hundreds of students in profound growth in Limud HaTorah. After stepping down from leading the Shalvim, he spent most of his time learning in his home in Har Nof. I was told by one of the Talmidim in Shalvim that he loved to learn between 5 and 7 a.m. in the morning on his porch because it was quietest and he was able to think and able to enjoy his learning. He would write other Svarim, including the Sefer Avas Tzedakah, which is one of the most important and popular Svarim printed recently on the laws of Tzedakah, the Sefer Imros HaMelech on the Rambam Hilchos Malachim, the Sefer HaMeseches Tzmura, the Darkei Musar, guiding those people involved in burial, and the Sefer Shmiras HaNefesh Kahalacha. Rav Avidan, as was pointed out by the message sent out by Shalavim, was no stranger to adversity and tragedy. He was wounded while in uniform and lost a daughter and a son-in-law. He took upon himself the responsibility of raising and caring those grandchildren. I would recommend for further investigation and listening to hear the hesped given by Rabbi Yehuda Tzaretsky on YU Torah in memory of Rav Avidan. And that is the second great sage we lost over the course of this very difficult weekend. The third was Rav Meshulman David Soloveitchik. We'll see pictures of him on the third slide. He was born in Brisk to Rav Yitzhak Zev Soloveitchik, better known as the Brisker Rav. And he was the seventh generation from Rav Chaim of Elashim. He would learn with his father, then in Kamenitz with Rav Baruch Berlibowitz, who we discussed before. We see the interconnectivity of the different gedolim we have spoken about so far. And then he would return to learn with his father until eventually his father passed away in the 1960s. He would escape with his father and some of his siblings from Poland in a miraculous fashion. The story of the Brisker Rav's escape is not for right now. And they made their way to Eretz Yisrael. And when the Brisker Rav passed away in 1961, he would establish his own yeshiva. Now, there was some controversy over which son and which grandson had the right and the title to call their yeshiva technically Yeshivas Brisk, to say you technically learned in Brisk. When Meshulam David's yeshiva was not technically known as Brisk, the other yeshiva was. I want to highlight about Rav Meshulam David three very important things that I think we all take away and all grow from on our own. The first is his Yirat Shamayim. Rav Volbi, the famed Mashkiach, the author of the Alei Shor, said that there was two people he knew that showed Shivisi Hashem L'negdei Tamim, that Hashem is before me at all times on their face. One was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik of Switzerland, and the other was Rav Meshulam David Soloveitchik, the person we're speaking about right now. Look at the pictures that I brought in front of you. It's a person who is thinking about a Kadosh Baruch Hu at every waking moment. Those who had the pleasure of davening with him saw that he was Omed Lifnei HaMelech in its most literal sense. He stood before the king. It wasn't uncommon for him to cry at certain points in the davening. Everything he did was a form of Yirat Shamayim, a form of his expression of awe and love of Hashem. He would say that everything in life is a form of one's Yirat Shamayim. He saw this with his father, the Brisker Rav, his grandfather, Rav Chaim, and he would often show visitors to his home the opening lines of the Shulchan Aruch, which speak about the central point of Avodas Hashem being Shivisi Hashem v'negdi tamid, that Hashem is before me at all times. And lesson number one is Rav Meshulam David's Yirat Shamayim. Number two is his pashtus, his simplicity. Nothing was fancy, nothing was extra. Look at pictures of his apartment, the way he conducted himself. Basic needs, simple, simple things in life. When the previous Satmar Rav, Rav Moshe Teitelbaum, came to visit him in his home, Rav Meshulam David honored his guest with a simple glass of tea and an apple. The Satmar Rav was used to being served with silver and gold dishes and the decorated fruit trees that you see with Rebbe's and the like. And the Rebbe sneaked a surprised look at his gabbai, like, you know, this, like, what's going on over here? And Rabbi Shimon David saw the look and he replied in the very sharp derech of Brisk and his predecessors, Ichabdas Gemaistret. Don't worry, I took Trumas and Maestras on, if that's what you're worried about. I took Trumas and Maestras in the apple, meaning I don't care about how you're served. It's simplicity. We serve a glass of tea, an apple. I took Trumas and Maestras, it's kosher, and that's how we do things here. When his mother-in-law, the mother of Moshe Sternbach, who we'll talk about in a moment, Rav Sternbach actually quotes his famed brother-in-law, Meshulam David, a few times in the Sefer Moed Muzman. He refers to him as Gisi Hagon, my brother-in-law, the genius. So when their mother, Rav Moshe Sternbach's mother, Meshulam David's mother-in-law, came to visit Eretz Yisrael over 60 years ago, she bought three children's chairs for the children to sit in. And those three chairs remained in the Soloveitchik home for the next 60 years in use. Simplicity, nothing fancy. He served as Rosh Yeshiva, the Mashkiach, the Gabbai of the Yeshiva. He would personally count out the stipends for the married men in the Yeshiva because he felt that's what he was there for. He took care of it. Nobody else had to do the job that he was capable of it. And in his original shiurim that he gave on Masechet Zvachim, they were printed. The editor of Yaakovson included footnotes with the comments of other Rosh Yeshiva, Achronim, other comments to make the work fancy. And later, Rav Meshulam David told him he didn't like this. Simple Svarim, comments on the Gemaras, not a lot of other fancy explanations. We don't need to bring in other ideas here. The simple, safer, putting out the ideas and not making things too fancy and too complicated. As a Rebbe, he could be sharp in giving Musar, but it was always with love and the vision of Hashem being before him at all time. The final point we want to bring out from Rav Meshulam David is Mesora. A link in the chain to his father, the Brisker Rav, his grandfather, Rav Chaim, and his great-grandfather, the Beis Halevi. After the Holocaust, the Brisker Rav had seven remaining children. Three children already died in the Holocaust. Two died from illness at a young age. Rav Meshulam David is the last of the Brisker Rav's children to leave this world. That's the end. That's the link. That's the last link we have to the Brisker Rav. Much of his learning and much of the stories he told were about his father, his derech, connecting those listeners and those Talmidim to a world that once was and a tradition that was sacred to the family. He mentioned in a number of interviews that in this generation, young people want their own ideas, their own dea. They want to pursue their own unique path. And the older generation feels they need to bend themselves to relate to the younger generation. But Rav Meshulam David said, in the past, the younger people wanted to know what their elders said. They wanted to know, what did the Talmidei Chachamim think? What did the great rabbis and rebbetzins have to say? This is the importance of Mesorah, that the younger generation should look back and value what came before them and to want to be part of that link and the chain in our tradition. You know, in the hesped that was given by his brother-in-law, Rav Moshe Sternbach, Rav Sternbach mentioned that when the Brisker Rav died, the father of Meshulam David, the Zalman Zeratzkin asked the question of Chazal. Why are the contents that are inside the Aron, the gold and wood Aron, the Luchos and the Torah that are inside, why are they inside the Aron? They're called Edus, the testimony. How can something testify to anything or tell you about anything if they're hidden inside a box, inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim? What is the Torah and the Luchos that we talk about in this week's Parsha? What could they testify to if they're hidden away? What's the message of calling them Edus, the testimony? So Rav Zalman Zeratzkin said, because the very knowledge and awareness of the Jewish people that the Luchos and the Torah of Moshe is sitting in the Kodesh HaKadoshim inside this box, and that the veracity of our Mesorah can be checked against this Torah and these Luchos, if there's ever a question, keeps us and the Mesorah intact. We know that we cannot deviate from our traditions because the content inside that Aron will always testify whether we're acting properly or not. We can always go back and check. What does that Torah say? What do those Luchos say? They are Edus. They testify. Even if we don't see them, we know in the back of our minds, we can't step too far away because those Luchos and that Sefer Torah will show us if we're doing the right thing or if we're doing the wrong thing. And Rav Zalman Zeratzkin said the same thing about the Brisker Rav. Even though the Brisker Rav wasn't a public figure who actively mixed into public affairs, but his very method of keeping the Torah and his MS is truth to keeping the Jewish people in check, because we knew that if we left the proper path of our Mesorah, of our traditions, then the Brisker Rav would say something against the way we were acting. He would show us and say, this is not the path of the Torah. This is not the path of our forefathers. This is not the path of a Jew. His very sitting inside his house and learning Torah was like the Aaron sitting in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and letting us know that we have to keep on the proper path. Rav Sternbach said a few days ago that the very same idea can be applied to his brother-in-law, Rav Meshulam David. The Torah world was kept in check because Rav Meshulam David quietly kept to himself, but would make it known if something was against the Masorah and against the way the Jewish people should act. We keep to the traditions, and we have another link in that chain going back to Har Sinai. Rav Meshulam David kept the Chumras and the Yir Shemayim of his family, and he ran the yeshiva in the Derech and the Masorah as well. But he also changed some things in significant ways. It was a Masorah, but also understanding the needs of the generation. In the Soloveitchik family, there was a strict avoidance to publishing Divrei Torah. However, Rav Meshulam David was more open and more accepting of his shiurim and Divrei Torah being presented. I would highly recommend the chidushim of Rav Meshulam David on the Torah and his drashos, beautiful Divrei Torah, beautiful stories about his family. And if you need something in English, the works of Rav Shimon Yosef Meller as well, the biographies of the Briska Rav, his Svarim on Chumash as well that become translated into English, has many beautiful Divrei Torah from Rav Meshulam David and the Soloveitchik families. Now, nowadays, some Masechtos on Shas, some Masechtos like Masechus Tzvura, Masechus Erchin, the Chidushim of Meshulam David Soloveitchik are the standard accompanying text. You have the Gemara and the novella of Meshulam David are becoming the standard text to learn some of these Masechtos because of his brilliant and penetrating insights into these Gemaras. You see in the pictures in front of you, him sitting there, the intensity of the way he looked, his intensity, his connection to Limud HaTorah, the eyes on his face just looking and glowing, having the image of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and his family in front of him at all times. I want to conclude with the fourth person who left us over this very difficult weekend, and that is Rabbi Abraham J. Tversky. It's probably the one that we have the most relatability to, the one who wrote in a language and spoke in a language that we can connect to as well. And I'm sure many, many people here have seen him, his works, his videos, his books as well. So I can't say that I have what to add in any significant way, but I'd like to point out for me as a lover and a reader and observer and a student of his writings and his work, what spoke to me and what I thought was unique about him versus other people. You know, Rabbi Tversky, if you see from the pictures in front of you, was a fascinating mix of the Hasidisha dynasty of Hornsteipel on one side from his father, his mother of Bubba. You see him there dancing with his grandfather, Bubba the Rebbe, from his mother's side. He also, as everybody hopefully has seen, the author of the famous Nigin Hoshia Samecha, which was sung by his Levaya, No Hespedim. You should go and Google that to go and see that very powerful image of them singing Hoshia Samecha, the Nigin that he came up with at his Levaya. And he's also the author of another Nigin, another song. He's the author of the song Afreilich in Tisha B'Av, which is a song about what it will be like when Mashiach comes and how Tisha B'Av will become a Yontif. And it's all in Yiddish, and it's sung by Avram Fried. All of this tied together as a mental health professional who changed the world in many, many beautiful ways. You see in the pictures here, pictures of him graduating medical school, him learning with his brother, him by his chuppah, all a beautiful mix of these things together. I want to focus on three things in Rabbi Tversky's approach, Rabbi Dr. Tversky's approach. The first, it would be remiss to not mention the idea of self-esteem. Now, I'm not going to tell the story here of how he came to realize that self-esteem is the most significant issue in mental health in our generation. I encourage you to go and watch the video of him telling the story of how he came to that realization and how it guided his own medical practice in guiding other people who are suffering. Rabbi Tversky felt that having self-esteem, teaching self-esteem and self-awareness of our abilities helps us help our children bring out their potential. His work and his books dealing with self-esteem directly are must-reads. But Rabbi Tversky would often say, really, all of his books that he printed, and we'll talk about all those books in a moment, all the books he wrote were really all about one thing, and that is self-esteem. They were all just packaged in different ways to get people to think more positively and more self-aware about themselves. please go and watch those videos. Rabbi Twersky was once asked, what type of Hasidim are the Twerskys? What type of Hasidim are the Twerskys? So his response was, we're not Hasidim, we're Rebbes. Now, what he meant was, in one sense, is that all the Twerskys turned out to be Rebbes in some form, different dynasties, different Rosh Yeshiva, they all turned out to be Rebbes in some form. But it's such a princely and chashiv answer. We're not just Hasidim, this family. We're Rebbes, we accomplish, we give, we want to help other people, whether it's medically, whether it's emotionally, whether it's in Torah. We're not Hasidim, we're Rebbes, he said. Self-esteem means self-respect and living up to a higher standard. And this all played out in his work on addiction and in helping other people dealing with addiction, his work guiding people how to understand addiction, cope with addiction, and the Century set up in Pittsburgh and other places have changed the lives of thousands and thousands of people. Point number two of Rabbi Twersky is his profound ability to learn from other people. There are so many stories in his writings about something he heard or observed of those who were greater of stature, and more often than not, lesser of stature than him, changed his perspective. In his work, Do Unto Others, he tells how a student of his brought comfort to a suffering schizophrenic patient by showing compassion where no one else was able to do it, and how that changed his perspective to deal with people who are suffering. His use of stories of Gedola Yisrael and Tzadikim to teach contemporary lessons is brilliant. As one of his titles indicates, they were not just stories. You can tell that when Rabbi Twersky told or thought of a story, it was a lesson that was ingrained with him. He uses stories of Tzadikim all over his writings. The stories pulsated through him. They had an impact on everything he did. And this is an important point. And these stories Rabbi Twersky writes and tells are many of the famous Hasidic stories, Gedolim stories that we've heard before about the Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Akiva Eiger spilling the wine at the table not to embarrass his guest. He didn't tell sensational stories. He didn't tell stories that have, you know, very fancy, you know, backgrounds that need slow music and are going to end up on YouTube and have fancy productions. Rabbi Twersky's stories are the famous, well-known stories about Gedolim and Tzadikim that we've all heard and grown up with and encountered in different places. He didn't need a new or exciting story to get us going. He told the same famous stories, but with such depth and insight and lessons that you never would have thought of it on your own. The famous stories of the Baal Shem Tov, great Hasidic masters, Rosh Yeshiva, Gedol Yisrael, and listen and watch how he tells a story and pulls out a lesson in such a profound way. And these stories lived with him. They were part of his psyche, his blood, and his being. Don't hear Gedolim stories and file them away as cute, adorable. Let us follow Rabbi Dr. Twersky's approach and make those stories about our Torah leaders a part of who we are, and listen and pay attention to those powerful messages. Most famously in his storytelling is perhaps the Peanuts cartoons featuring Charlie Brown and the gang to teach profound lessons. He has spoken often, written often about his relationships to the Peanuts comics and his relationships with Charles Schulz. I'll let you go and look online. You'll find the stories him telling about those relationships. The last and the third point I'd like to bring about Rabbi Twersky is the role of the neshama in spirituality. Rabbi Dr. Twersky viewed all of Klal Yisrael and all people as one shared neshama. In his book, Dearer Than Life, he writes that the soul is part of Hashem himself, and Hashem is absolute unity. Therefore, all souls are essentially one. We are separate and distinct beings only by virtue of our physical bodies. He was able to have such a beautiful view of people because of his spiritual view of the entire world and all of humanity. That we're all one, we're all connected, and there's no reason to hate and to cause discord and pain. In his book, The Spiritual Self, and he also has that's like a more secular version of it, the more frumer version is called Twersky on Spirituality. He argues that because we have a neshama, we do have free choice and we have the ability to grow. The more a person recognizes their neshama, then the more they can make better choices. You have a neshama. You're not an animal. You can make yourself better. You can help people. You can help yourself. but he only has that view because he values the chelik elokam imal, the godly essence that's inside of us. A person cannot make another person happy. We can only make your own choice for yourself, but you can support people in their growth. But you can't force other people, but you can build yourself up. He tells the famous, he tells a beautiful mashal about the young man who's eating fish. And the person, he asks the young man, why are you eating fish? And the young man says, because I love fish. So you love fish, right? So that's why you took it out of the water. You killed it and you boiled it. That's why you love fish. So don't tell me you love fish, Rabbi Twersky said. You love yourself. And because the fish tastes good, therefore you took it out of the water, you killed it and you ate it. And he says so much of what we call love is called fish love. Young couples fall in love. A young man and a young woman fall in love. And what does that mean? It means that he saw this woman, someone he felt could provide him with all of his physical needs and emotional needs. And she felt this man was somebody she could feel, that she could tell that this was love and he's going to provide for her. But really each one is only looking out for their own needs. It's not love for the other. The other person becomes a vehicle for self-gratification. He says, this is what we call fish love, an external love that's more based on what I'm going to get and not what I'm going to give. So Rabbi Twersky said, if we base on Rabbi Dessler's chesed, Rabbi Twersky explained that if we viewed everybody as an neshama, and we viewed every single person as a spiritual being, as a holy being, then we would never want to take advantage of them. We would want to benefit them. We want to help them. And we want to give to them. All coming from his worldview about the neshama and how we're all connected. This comes through in his approach in tefillah, beautiful works on tefillah, beautiful works on tshuva, and personal responsibility. He has a beautiful work called Let Us Make Man. And there he writes that tshuva needs a thorough search of one's character to discover what allowed the transgressions to occur. And then we have to make the necessary changes in our character to prevent the recurrence of the misdeed. If we want Hashem to forgive us as a merciful father, as a child would as a parent would towards a child, at the same time, we need to treat Hashem with the respect that's worthy of a king. And he would often stress that prayer and tefillah are supposed to change us. We change, we build ourselves up, we can make a difference, and we can turn ourselves around, obviously with the help of Hashem, because we have a neshama and we have free choice. And don't let it go to waste, and don't let us misuse that free choice that we have. Rabbi Twersky was incredibly normal in his ruchnius and his spirituality. He would write that spirituality doesn't mean divorcing oneself from the physical world. It means leading a normal life, but a material life that is suffused with spirituality, because spirituality and ruchnius and the neshamos are everywhere. He writes in his beautiful work, Do Unto Others, a beautiful line. He says, if you are in search of spirituality, you have it. If you believe you already have it, you have lost it. There's a lot to say about Rabbi Twersky. There's a lot to say about all these people. I would say that I would ask everybody to go onto Wikipedia and to look at the list of all of his works. Find something to read, something you can pick up and relate to. Each one is brilliant. Each book is special. Rabbi Twersky wrote 90 books in his 90 years on this earth. Quite remarkable. Positive parenting, regarding guiding people in the first year of marriage. If you're interested in social work, if you're interested in psychology, Rabbi Dr. Twersky's works are invaluable for everybody. So what can we take away for everybody here, from all four people, Rav Avidan, Rav Yitzhak Shiner, Rav Shlomo David Soloveitchik, and Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky? I would say that the three things they all seem to have in mind: Pashtus, simplicity, is Yirah Shemayim, a relationship with Hashem, and Mesora, transmitting those traditions. You know, when it comes to Pashtus, the simplicity of sitting and learning, not needing many things, health, family, relationships, we find through all four of them. When it comes to Yirah Shemayim, the importance of spirituality, neshama, Shivis Hashem, and Negri Tamid at all times, we saw in all four of them the way they live their lives. And Mesora, keeping parts of the traditions, whether it's Rav Avidan bringing the Mesora of his learning to his students, from Meshulam David Soloveitchik, bringing the Masorah of his family and the Brisker dynasty to the world and keeping everybody on track with MS and Yirah Shemayim. Whether it's Rav Yitzhak Shiner, not being fancy, no Chidushim, taking the Torah of his Rosh Yeshiva and teaching with passion and teaching with love and giving it over to the next generation of students. And Rabbi Twersky taking the traditions, the stories of our Gedolim, of his family, of his Hasidic dynasty, and sharing that Torah, those ideas with our people, and to spread that Masorah and that Torah along with the world. So, it's been a difficult weekend for Klal Yisrael, but the least we can do, the very least we can do, is to not let the memory of these special four men go to waste, to pick up where they have left off, to pick up the baton, and to keep the Masorah going, and to teach and to learn, and to share their Divrei Torah, their ideas, with our friends, families, and loved ones. Okay.